You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and I'm joined today by the assistant sports editor Janie Hugh and sports features writer Ron Krochek. So here we are back at the San Francisco Chronicle newsroom. It's Thursday afternoon. We're about to get going with a back-to-back. Tonight we got Warriors against San Antonio at Oracle Arena. Tomorrow I'll be up in Portland, my hometown, to watch the Warriors face the Trailblazers. We have a really special guest with us today. Obviously, we have Janie Hugh, the sports editor, the assistant sports editor here at the San Francisco Chronicle, but we also have Ron Krochek, who's our sports features writer, does a little bit of everything. I'm sure you've read a lot of his enterprise over the years. He's also kind of our de facto number two on the beat, is very helpful whenever I need someone at practice, is always there. And he had a phenomenal enterprise piece, really a project, come out today that was an in-depth look at Steph Curry, who is about to turn 30 on March 14th, next Wednesday. And that'll be a pretty big milestone for him. Obviously, you know, you look at players in their careers, and 30 is kind of when they start to decline. And so Ron had a really good piece looking at the challenges that face him on the horizon. And so, Ron, really, what was kind of the germ of the idea of this story? When did you first start to think that this could be a good idea?
Well, I think if you look at the history of the NBA, it's kind of fascinating to me that guards have a much harder time staying productive in their 30s. If you look in, as I mentioned in the story, the list of all-time games played, most games played, seven of the top eight are big men. You know, a lot of Kareems and Moses Malone and players like that who didn't have to run up and down the court the way Steph Curry does. John Stockton is the only guard on that list. He seems like kind of an anomaly for someone who made it to 41 at an all-star level. So the idea was just to sort of, I mean, Curry has had such a transcendent career for a guy who wasn't expected to do much. You know, going to college, was lightly recruited, a lot of skepticism even when he came to the NBA. And here he's turning 30 with two championships, two MVPs, and the face of this ridiculous, incredible franchise that he's completely turned around with a lot of help, obviously. Yeah. But if you think back to where the Warriors were in 2009 when he hopped aboard, nobody would have predicted that we would be doing a podcast here about a dynasty.
I think most people's introduction to Steph Curry was probably back in the NCAA tournament when he was playing for Davidson, and you had this baby face, looked like he was 12 or 13-year-old guy leading the team on an unexpected run. We've now seen him evolve into a person who's revolutionized the NBA in terms of it being acceptable now not to just launch 10 three-pointers a game, but as you said in your story, from 3 or 4 feet behind the three-point line. In your research, what numbers stood out, or what kind of standings stood out?
Well, I think you make that's exactly the point, that it's not just shooting threes, it's the volume of threes and the distance of threes. Steve Kerr told me a story, which I used in my piece, about 2013 when the Warriors first made the playoffs under Mark Jackson, and Kerr is at the Four Seasons Hotel bar in Miami with all his TNT colleagues. Charles Barkley apparently buying everyone drinks. I know that's stunning. And they're watching Curry and Klay Thompson launch these threes, not just right at the line, but well beyond the line, and make them as the Warriors beat the Nuggets and then push the Spurs to six. And Kerr remembers thinking, you know, this is changing things. And what he, as he pointed out, what's happened is it changed things for up-and-coming players who suddenly thought, hey, that's cool. Let's do that. I'm going to get good at shooting from 25, 30 feet. And what it's done is really changed the chess pieces of the game, where all the players are now spread out farther on the court, and you have to guard guys 5 feet beyond the arc, and that opens up space in the middle. And it's completely kind of changed the geometry in many ways of the way the NBA's played.
So to me, the interesting thing about, you know, the timing of his 30th birthday, especially given what we've seen this season, is the narrative of his right ankles is becoming a thing again. Obviously, right. About 5 years ago, his career was seriously threatened. A lot of people thought that he would never realize his potential because of his nagging right ankle injuries. And you've seen this season that that's becoming a concern again. Obviously, right. He missed a significant chunk back in December with a right ankle sprain. He missed a couple more games with the same injury a couple weeks later. Then there's been several times since then that he's tweaked it and been able to stay in games or been able to come back the next game. Obviously, last week in Atlanta, we saw that again. I think a lot of people were kind of scared when he tweaked his ankle. And it's always the same ankle, it seems. It's always that right ankle. So I guess one thing I'm curious about is as he gets older in age and as he gets into his 30s, you know, is the likelihood of a really serious ankle injury going to increase?
Ankles, as you know, and as Steph is finding out, are stubborn things. I played in high school and had ankle sprains all the time. And you know, Steph's obviously playing at a much higher level, much faster speed. And like you said, it's happened multiple times. It's not just once or twice. And if you look at the guards who've broken down in their 30s, and one example I used in the story was Kevin Johnson, you know, guy I went to school with at Cal, who was a dominant NBA player in his late 20s, and then his hamstring and leg injuries really cut short his career. So it is a legitimate question with Steph, absolutely. And they feel like they've kind of got a handle on it now, that they have the training and the precautionary tape and everything he does to try to protect that ankle. But there's only so much you can do. You're still running and jumping at a high speed in a very intense environment. So that's always going to be a risk for any player, but particularly for Steph, because once you sprain an ankle, it's more susceptible to re-sprains. So you're right, Connor. As he gets to 33, 34, 35, you know, they might have to manage his minutes even more or find ways to keep him fresh and limit the vulnerability of that ankle.
And one thing that can't hurt is you have several guys on the roster right now and guys he's played with in the past who have kind of been a blueprint for how to be successful
right.
in your 30s. Right now you see David West, 37 years old, 10th oldest player in the league, very productive off the bench, arguably their best bench player this season, arguably, honestly, the best bench player in the league right now if you're looking at a per-minute basis.
Right.
And then Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, those are guys who are very in tune with their bodies, know exactly how to get the best at the right time out of their bodies. Do you think that he'll benefit from that going forward?
Well, I think he benefits from that. I think he benefits from the fact that he grew up around with a dad who played 16 years in the league. So he's going way back into his childhood, had a sense for what it takes to not only make the league but stay in the league. And one of the sidebars we did for this package was Steve Nash, who is the one player, when you ask Steve Kerr who's most comparable to Steph Curry, you know, the first reaction is nobody, right? It's very unique to have that ball handling and be able to shoot from 30, 35 feet. And the one guy that's sort of analogous that Kerr mentions is Steve Nash, who had that ball handling, had the range on his shot. Well, Steve Nash won two MVPs in his 30s, 31 and 32, and made his last All-Star appearance at 38, and conveniently is a consultant for the Warriors.
Yeah.
So he's available to kind of bounce things off Steph or have Steph bounce things off him. And he was very innovative. Kerr, coincidentally, was a general manager in Phoenix when Nash was in his 30s. And Kerr told me that he would see Nash taking these ice baths after every game, you know, before it became kind of fashionable. And it's not fun to sit in 58-degree water for 15 minutes after you've played an NBA game, as Kerr pointed out. But Nash did it because he knew he had to.
Well, and now Steph Curry has the benefit of technology improving. Yes. He's got these cryo chambers, which essentially simulate the same thing,
correct,
basically preserving the body, keeping the muscles cold. And
yeah, and I think he was on this track anyway, but I think Nash can reinforce for him the value of that. And, you know, Kerr, this didn't make the story, but Kerr talked about when because he played till he was 37. As he put it, I remained mediocre until I was 37. But he ran a lot in his 30s to keep his legs strong. Said the problem was it wore out his knees, and his knees just were worn to a pulp by the time he was done. And now people are smarter about it. Like Janie mentioned, with technology and sophisticated training methods, you know, Curry knows what to work on. It's not all about strength. It's about flexibility and balance and agility and nutrition and all these things. You know, David West cut out sugar.
Right.
Curry's gone to gluten-free diet the last few years. He feels like it's really helped him. So, yeah, he has so many resources. I mean, West is a very different kind of player, but West, Iguodala, Livingston, like you pointed out, Nash is there. Kerr himself is there, right, as someone who played into his late 30s.
And it's also not all about the physical side, right? It's about,
correct,
staying mentally fresh. And it seems like Steph has really started to figure that out over the past couple of years. You know, he's really good about not overworking himself, especially during the season. He plays golf whenever he can. He spends as much time as possible with Aisha and the kids. And, you know, that is something that has to help him once you're entering this stage of his career, right?
Yeah, if he ever wears himself out, it's probably because he played too much golf. Let's be honest, as that shattered table in the hotel room would indicate. Yeah, that you're absolutely right. And a lot of everybody I talked to for this story made the point that, I mean, obviously he's going to lose a step at some point. But the one thing he has that tends to last longer is that shot. And he's a smart guy. He gets that. If they're going to fly at him at the three-point line, you take two dribbles and make a 15-footer. And he's kind of taking more of those mid-range shots, I feel like, this year. Certainly going to the hoop more. He's at the free-throw line six times a game versus 4.6 last year, which is a big, big jump if you think about it, especially when you're making 92% of your free throws. That's a point and a half more a game. Right. Well, that could be the difference in the finals, right?
Right.
So I think Steph's smart enough, and the Warriors are definitely smart enough, with their analytics team and just the way they approach things, that he's going to adapt. And that's part of what I wanted to write about is how do you adapt as you get older, right? And Steph would seem very well equipped to adapt, but this isn't science, right? I mean, he tweaks his ankle, like you said, Connor, and all this preparation flies out the window.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of his career unfolds.
And you had another sidebar that I thought was really interesting, and I hadn't really thought about this until we were talking about your story idea a couple weeks ago. But, you know, obviously Steph isn't the only one, you know, reaching this plateau or reaching this milestone. There's several other guys, pretty important guys, who are on the verge of that. Obviously Kevin Durant is 29. You got Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, who are all right around that age. So they're not that far behind Steph in terms of reaching 30. And it's going to be interesting to see how, as a group, they handle, you know, aging together, because that's going to really dictate how long this dynasty lasts.
Well, I think that's one of the fascinating things about this run for the Warriors is any team to win two championships in 3 years would be fascinating and be talk of a dynasty. But the fact that they've done it with a core that's in their 20s, and I mean, Steph's the first one of the main guys to hit 30, you know, that has stirred, I think, even more talk of, is this going to be this incredible dynasty that goes on for 5, 6, 7 years? Because it's feasible, right? When your core players are not even 30 yet. And as you said, Durant hits 30 in September. Green and Thompson are both 28, so they'll hit 30 in early 2020. So, yeah, that sidebar was talking to Bob Myers. You know, they can't be young forever. Right. What are you thinking? I mean, obviously Steph's got a 5-year contract now. He's locked up. Durant's technically eligible for free agency this summer. Certainly no expectation that he'll leave, but the reality is it's going to be hard to keep everybody together, right?
And I think an important part about that is you can't stop people from aging, right?
Right.
But what the onus is going to be on Bob Myers and the rest of the front office to continue to bring in quality young players who can shoulder heavier and heavier loads as the seasons go by to help take a little bit of a burden off those guys as they do get older and help them give, you know, the occasional night off and that sort of thing. And I think the Warriors are doing that. I think you're already seeing that Jordan Bell is a guy who I think is going to be in their long-term plans, who could be a real factor going forward. I think Patrick McCaw is starting to show that. I think that, you know, as if they can continue to hit, you know, late in the first round or early in the second round, or, you know, make shrewd moves with those young guys, that's going to help them so much.
Yeah, I mean, they're a lot of teams are going in the draft and being scrutinized for how much they can help their team now, right, and try to get in the playoff hunt now. And the Warriors is totally different formula. And you're right, they've got to find young guys who have a longer track, longer path to their prime, who are more affordable, right, mm-hmm. at that age, at 22, 23. You don't have to pay them what they have to pay Steph and Clay and Draymond and Durant. Jordan Bell's a great example. Patrick McCaw. And that's why I think you hear some of this, what sounds like crazy chatter about the Warriors trying to plot to get Anthony Davis, right, yeah. down the line. But what they're doing is, what if Klay Thompson leaves? What if Draymond leaves? You know, yeah, in a perfect world, they keep the core together. Look around sports. It doesn't often happen that way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the Warriors, to their credit, as Myers says, one foot in the present, one foot in the future. You got to think, okay, what are we going to do if this happens or if this happens? You know, Curry's locked up now, as we talked about, as he should be. And I would guess Durant's going to be locked up. But, you know, at some point you run out of money. At some point you hit the salary cap or the, you know.
You're not having four guys on max contracts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but they have said they're willing to spend as much into the luxury as they need to. And I'm pretty confident in talking to people in the organization. I'm pretty confident that they're going to be able to keep this core together for, you know, at least the foreseeable future, at least the next 4 or 5 years, maybe 4 years, because Klay Thompson, the big question marks right now are obviously Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, and knowing those guys and going off what they've said, I just believe that they understand what they have here and they're not going to.
And I think you're probably absolutely right here on March 8th, 2018,
right.
But who knows what happens between now and February of 2020 or June of 2020,
That's,
you know? No one ever would have thought Durant was going to be here, right?
Right.
No one thought LeBron was going to go to Miami, and then definitely no one thought LeBron was going to go back to Cleveland.
Yep. Right.
That's the beauty of, as Myers said in the story, that's the beauty of sports. It evolves. Yeah. It changes. There's just so many crazy things. I mean, Tim Lincecum's wearing a Rangers uniform now.
I was just going to say, that's the beauty of the league, is that, you know, you can't predict what happens. There will be some league-altering injuries or whatnot that changes the playing field.
And you're already seeing teams be better than we maybe thought they would be. I mean, Houston is much more of a threat this season than I think a lot of people
absolutely
thought they would be. And I think the more that other teams bridge that divide and become more and more competitive with the Warriors, the more it's going to change the Warriors' reality. Because then it's not just about maintaining, but actually trying to get better.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why it's so important that they bring along Jordan Bell and he develops a shot. And you know, completes his game, because he obviously has the athletic ability and skill set to become a great player. That's why it's important that McCaw becomes more consistent. You know, he's had those flashes, like you've said, but he's also had flashes where he's very ordinary. Yeah. And they need him at some point to be probably a starter. So it's as Janie said, it's all part of the fascinating evolution of this. And you know, yeah, and some of me thinks 5 years from now you'll see that core together. So a lot of me thinks, no, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just, we don't know what.
Yeah.
It's illogical, but something usually happens.
But it is the thing, right? You look back in history, dynasties don't last. I mean, quote unquote dynasty. You think, you know, you got a huge window and inevitably it closes a lot sooner than you
think. Again, let's stop and think. We're talking about the Warriors and a dynasty in the same sense. And when Janie covered the Warriors those years ago, I mean, 500 was a pipe dream, you know? And I mean, this was not just a bad, I did a story. Go back and look. It has to be 10 years ago on the culture of losing in sports. And the hook to that story was the Warriors, because they had become so bad. They were such a league-wide joke.
Right.
I wrote a whole 70-inch story about the things that typify a losing culture. I looked at the Clippers and I looked at the you know, the Cleveland Browns and the Warriors were part of that conversation. I mean, they had a player choaking their coach.
Yeah.
They had everything you can think of.
And I'm guessing a lot of what you found there was a lot of it goes back to ownership.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that's that, you know, and that's clearly when this franchise, mm-hmm. I mean, when did Lacob take over? In 2010, I think.
2010, yeah.
So right after they drafted Steph, a year after they drafted Steph. So, yes, Lacob was probably even more important than Steph in some ways to this whole picture. I mean, Connor would know the details better than I would, but Steph's contract, if you list the five things that fueled this Warriors rise,
right.
Steph and Lacob are right up there. Steph's contract is up there.
Steph's bulky ankle is one of the biggest reasons why they are.
Because it led to this bargain contract, which allowed them the flexibility to add these other pieces, including Durant. Well, that's a great example. You know, it's easy to forget the Warriors won their first championship with Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. They conquered him to win it. It was Harrison Barnes at that position. And everybody, it still was an amazing team, right? Well, what did they do? They went and got better. Mm-hmm. By sacrificing Bogut and Barnes and these other guys to add Kevin Durant. It's easy to forget. This is only his second year with the Warriors.
Right.
You know, and no one would have, I mean, 2 years ago, if we were sitting here doing a pod, we wouldn't have discussed with any seriousness.
We would have had all these prognostications about, oh, when Harrison Barnes is a free agent and
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's why, that not to be a devil's advocate on your point, but that's why I am skeptical that they're all going to be together 4 or 5 years from now, because we couldn't have predicted Harrison Barnes and the Kevin Durant swap.
Right.
And Bob Myers couldn't have predicted it. I mean, Bob Myers will tell you candidly, he didn't expect Kevin Durant to say yes.
He
wanted him to, but he didn't think it was going to happen.
That went down July 4th, and I remember it vividly, and it stunned everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, and that's
stunned the entire league.
And that's less than 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. So. It's crazy. Well, if you haven't already, all those stories that we've just referenced are already online at sfchronicle.com. Great work from Ron. Great work from our digital team. Great work from our graphics team. It was really a team effort. So please take the time to read that. You will not regret it. Thank you so much, Ron, for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me as part of the team.
but the reality of this situation is that, you know, we can talk all about Steph Curry and all that, but, you know, this is a team that is going through a lot right now. You know, Steph, obviously, we just referenced earlier in the pod, tweaked his right ankle at Atlanta last week and is looking like he's better, but they're under some real pressure right now.
Well, I go to India for 2 weeks and change, and I come back and I see Houston's got a 17-game winning streak, the Pelicans 10 games, the Blazers 8 games. That feeds into that pressure, doesn't it?
The standings in the Western Conference are as absurd as I think I've ever seen them. I mean, obviously you have, you know, Houston and then the Warriors, and then beyond that, it's just completely a jumbled mess. I mean, to even try to guess who the Warriors would play in the first round at this point is lunacy, because there's, you know, several games separating the number 3 and number 8 seed. Have you ever seen anything like
that? No, it's crazy. But my real question is, how big is Steph Curry in India? I mean, is the NBA followed in India? Do you need
I remember they made this big push for the NBA China when Yao Ming was a part of the league. And at that stage, I remember the league officials were tapping India as like the next big thing.
Right.
I don't think it's played out so much as far as I could see. I could tell you I saw a lot of cricket going on, but I don't think it's made it as big as
well, it's fascinating to me because in golf, you know, they all often say China and India, right? For obvious reasons, because they're the most populous countries on earth, right? Well, India, that golfer from India had the lead in the big tournament last week and was just invited to the Masters because Augusta's trying to grow the game in India, right? So that's why I asked the question, because given the population in India and China and given Curry's global appeal and his brand, as they say, it would be interesting. I mean, you obviously weren't there exploring a story, but it'd be interesting to know sort of how much the NBA has resonated in a country like that.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember a guy named Satnam? I'm probably butchering his name, but Satnam Singh Bahamara. He was actually a second round pick in 2015 out of IMG Academy. A guy who came over from India, was kind of at the grassroots level of NBA in India. You know, ended up kind of being one of those guys where you knew that Dallas was picking him largely to try to expand their roots in India and help progress the game there.
What year was that?
2015.
Oh, okay.
And he ended up being a second round pick, and he's already out of the G League. I mean, he didn't last. I don't think he's playing right now at all.
Was he a big guy?
He's a big guy. Yeah, he was 7'2", really raw. But they had a big documentary. I think it's on Netflix. I watched last year on him that got into the fact that he was kind of, you know, India was kind of resting their basketball hopes on this guy. And he obviously didn't pan out. But there's going to be other guys like that. I think India just needs kind of a Yao Ming type player. That's really what it takes, is they need someone who they can really rally around to get them excited, and that'll completely expand the sport in that country.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. It's much easier when you have that guy to aspire to, and he can carry kind of that national emblem like Yao did. It seems like the underlying theme is everybody recognizes that it's such a populous country that there's going to be talent there. It's surfacing that and getting it into the cultural norms of playing that sport and excelling at it.
Right. And logically, basketball, if you have someone who has the size like that guy did at 7'2", the resources are probably there. And I know in golf, which I cover a lot, there's an expense issue, right? Which is how expensive the game is. And I don't know how much of a hurdle that is in basketball, but certainly the NBA spread its wings globally and will reach those countries if they haven't already.
And a lot of it goes back to TV deals. One thing that I noticed when I was researching the Warriors' popularity in China, entering that China trip, was a big reason why it is so big. Basketball is so big in China now is because back in the day, David Stern saw that was an untapped market and established a really lucrative TV deal. So every single NBA game would be broadcast there. And so people are following the NBA just because it's on TV all the time.
Yeah. And the NBA and China are so far ahead in terms of how, like, the viewership is very different there. It's all like live streamed, and this is starting years ago, and how they consume the games are very, very different. And it's fascinating topic.
And Adam Silver's talked about wanting to have games in India and wanting to tap that market a little bit more. So it's cool that you got to go there. I know you had a good time. I was following your Facebook. It sounded like it was a pretty epic trip.
It was intense. If you've been to India, you'll know what I mean when I say it comes at you from all angles, between the sights and the sounds and everything like that. Lucky to have had the chance to go there. It was for a friend's wedding, and we built a trip around it. Also very glad to be back here and jumping right into the thick of, you know, the Warriors ramping up for the playoffs, Steph turning 30, baseball around the corner, just to give it, you know, just to cast out the umbrella of Bay Area sports a little more.
There's never a dull time on this beat, which is why I love covering it. Makes our job easy because, you know, there's never a shortage of storylines. And so with that being said, you know, I'm about to, you know, we got to head to the arena in a couple hours for the San Antonio game. I'm going to head to Portland and then Minnesota. I'm curious to see if the Warriors can, you know, really close out games. You've seen them let inferior opponents back into games, you know, Atlanta, Brooklyn, New York. If they can run away, especially against a couple teams that are definitely going to make the playoffs, in Minnesota, in Portland. So it'll be fun to watch. That being said, we're finally on iTunes, so make sure you're locked and loaded. Follow us on iTunes. We'll be back next week. And thanks again to Ron Krychek for joining us today. This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. This show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow us on Twitter at @Con_Cron, @Janie_Hugh, and @Ron Krychek. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com.